podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.
Well, 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 this is Radical Australia. Now, we only do, well, we basically do live interviews, and our guest is running a few minutes late. So while we're waiting for Darren, first of all, I'd like to thank all those people that came to the 50th birthday gathering or party, whatever you like to call it, at Collingwood Town Hall on Saturday. A great combination of people. Good to see so many people there, many from the very beginning and some that have just joined 3CR in the last 12 months. So it was good to see so many people and so many of the programmers having stalls there and having the ability to talk to people. And I appreciate all the people that came up to the Anarchist World this week, Radical Australian Talk Back with Attitude stall for a chat. So thank you very much. Secondly, I have some bad news. Now, we were set a target of 1,400 for Radical Australia. And I'm embarrassed to say, that's for the radiophone, we've only raised to date 1,095, which is really good, but it's still $305 short. Now, unfortunately, because it's after the 1st of July, you can't get a legal, legitimate tax deduction for last financial year, but you can start now and get a legal, legitimate tax deduction for this financial year, which started on the 1st of July. So if you are interested in donating, if you're interested in donating to 3CR, what I suggest you do is ring the front desk on 94198377 and pledge your money right now. And you can always go to 3cr.org.au/donate. Now, our guest has arrived. He's a bit short of breath because he's run here all the way. Some people say he caught a taxi, but I don't believe that. I had these messages on my phone, Henrietta, over the last few minutes. All these messages are saying, I'm coming, public transport let me down. I can't believe it, Darren, that public transport let you down. God, are you a doctor? This writing is disgusting. Darren, what is this?
No, sorry, Joe, I'm not, but I do have disgusting writing, you're correct.
Well, how do you spell your surname?
S-A-F-F-I-N.
Saffin?
Yes.
Not like saffron. Saffron.
No, not like
S-A-F-F-I-N. So that's on your birth certificate. Darren Saffin, is
100%, 100%.
It? 100%. Any middle names?
John. Just one.
Darren John Saffin. You're not really that saffron character.
No. And oh, he was a Russian tennis player, but he had one F in his surname. I don't know. Yes. But I'm not related to him either.
Now, so you've done something that nobody's ever been able to do on this program. Henrietta doesn't normally talk.
Wow.
She refuses to talk because she's ashamed of being the producer of Talkback with
Attitude.
A
tennis fan.
Ah. But she doesn't have her microphone on. It's pathetic. People think it's mumbling in the background. What a tough... Now, Darren, I've got you in here for a very good reason because I was very impressed with the way you were part of the organising committee for the last public housing mass rally. I thought it was a great, great day. And I know you're a bit... nervous about it, but it all went brilliantly well, I thought. What did you think?
Yeah, I agree, and thanks for your time on the day as MC, Joe. That was much appreciated. Yeah, and keeping me calm. I was very nervous at the
yes,
start.
Were nervous. I think, what's he nervous about? There's hundreds of thousands of people here. What's he nervous about?
It's that old classic. And speaking to people on the day was really funny because we're scheduled to start at 11 and the crowd kind of came later. And a lot of people said, oh, we just come for the march, not for all the speeches.
Yeah.
So it's that old classic. So.
Yeah, I said, Darren, don't worry. It doesn't matter. You can only work with what you've got. And then it just got bigger and bigger. Now,
brilliant.
Darren, what year were you born?
67.
Where were you born?
I was born in Geelong Hospital. Family was living in Colac at the time.
So it was a mad dash for your mum to get to Geelong Hospital from Colac. It's a fair way.
Yeah. I must have been thinking about it. I've never actually asked that question.
Well, is she still alive?
Yeah, she is, yeah.
What's her name?
Linda.
Yeah. And is your dad still with us?
No, my dad passed maybe... Oh, just over a year ago now.
Really? What was his name?
His name was George.
So, any siblings?
Yeah, three brothers.
So there are four of you little bastards, were they? Yeah. Four of you. Yeah, your poor mum, Linda.
That's what everybody says. I don't know if we were that bad. I don't know. But, yeah.
It's not that you were bad. You're just jumping around all over the place and wrestling and doing all the things that young boys do.
I guess so. Like, and then you had five. Males and one female in the house.
Has your mother ever said to you that she wished she had a daughter?
No, she hasn't actually. No,
right.
No. My mum is my mum's very cool.
Cool.
Yeah.
So unlike you.
Yeah,
she doesn't. She doesn't get nervous.
No. No, not anymore. Anyway.
No. So what were they like as parents?
Oh, my mum. Yeah, my mum is fantastic. I give a lot of credit to my mum for raising me. Yeah. My dad was the classic white dad, providing for the family, working hard.
Doing overtime.
Yeah, and then, doing all the Masons and the Rotary and the Lions Club all that stuff. So he was a bit of an absent father.
Yeah.
You'd see him on the weekends and he'd just be saying, it's your turn to mow the lawn or it's your turn to wash the car.
So
that classic.
Yeah, 60s dad,
100%,
That's the way it was, I remember, I'm a bit older than you, about 15, 16 years older than you, and it's a difficult time for them, I'm never a critic of people, we're all victims of our time. Who knows what they're going to say about us in 20 years' time?
Mm.
They may say, what a bunch of losers,
Let's hope not, but you never know.
You're right. Well, he did the right thing. He did what he felt was important.
Yeah, and I think he did the best he can. And my brother made an interesting comment. I don't know how personal you want to get, but he reckoned that if, 20, 30 years later, Dad probably would have got diagnosed like depressive or something like that. Because he was looking back. Yeah, he did. There was something going on, but who knows exactly what it was,
Did he take part in World War II or was he too young?
Too young,
How about, was he conscripted for Vietnam or?
Well, that's a good question too. And you're going to ask me when his birthday was, aren't
you? No, I'm not asking you what his birthday was.
He was born on Anzac Day, but I don't know what year.
Well, I mean, the thing is that you're saying, that he had this kind of depressive element to his personality.
He must have been too young because he didn't go to Vietnam either.
Didn't go to Vietnam, right. So what was primary school like?
Oh, I don't have good memories.
Tell us about the bad memories. Were you different or something?
No, like my dad. He worked for the SEC when it was the SEC.
State Electric Corporation, Electricity Corporation.
Like when it was a government public service thing, right? And
you didn't live in SEC housing, did you?
No, lived in Housing Commission a few times.
Right.
But he worked his way up and ended up managing districts of Victoria.
Mm-hmm.
And to get promoted, you had to move to a bigger district, more responsibility. So we moved a lot. I went to 8 different schools.
Primary schools.
Oh, probably secondary and primary. Oh, I can't really remember primary school much at all, but it was just moving a lot.
Yeah, it's a tragedy, isn't it? Because you can't develop real friendships
as
a
kid. And, yeah,
that's 100%. That's the big thing.
And I got 2 kids now, and I said I'd never do that to them. So, they haven't moved anywhere. So I don't have any friends from school days at all.
No.
And
no.
It just, school was pretty shit.
Yeah. Was it shit because because you were moving all the time or because you found it hard learning?
I didn't mind the learning. It was just the moving. Yeah. And, you're just the new kid all the time and there's a lot of bullying and picked on and stuff like that until you finally found a little group where you kind of fitted in.
Right, where you could use your collective fists to defend yourself. we won't talk about that.
Not the happiest days of my life. School days.
And where did you go to high school or secondary college?
Oh, first I started off in... I started off in Kyneton, then Terrelgan, and then ended up at Heathmont College in Melbourne. When I was 16, we moved to Melbourne.
So did you feel good about moving to Melbourne?
Oh, by then I probably didn't care.
Didn't care?
We'd never really got a choice. It wasn't like the family would sit down and Dad would say, what do you think? It was we'd sit down and he'd say, this is what's going on.
That's the way it was. Yeah. It was in those, if you wanted to get ahead in your job, that's what you had to do. You had to move.
And he did get ahead. He got You'll probably like this one. One of the last things my dad did at the SEC before he took a payout was get it ready for privatisation.
That's what you're told to do. Government legislation and what are you going to do?
Exactly.
So you graduated, obviously.
Oh, year 11.
You only went to year 11?
I only went to year 11, yeah.
So why did you leave?
It's a good question. And looking back, I got a job. I thought it was a good thing to do.
Now, what were you doing?
I did an electronics course. I worked for the SEC as well.
All right. Yeah, father son rule.
I know, right? I know.
You look. Stop annoying him. Stop disrespecting him, mate. He got you a foot in the door before he got privatised.
I guess so, right? But you look back, it was so stereotypical.
Yeah.
But so I studied electronics at RMIT for 2 years.
When it was a real technical college.
I was just talking about that last one with my partner. Yeah. It's such a different world there now.
Yeah.
But and the SEC paid for that, and in return I had to work for them for 2 years.
Obviously you would know the history of RMIT.
Oh, go on, refresh me.
Remember, working men, they needed somewhere to be educated because they needed to be proficient in certain skills in order to do the new jobs which were being created by industrialisation. So RMIT was basically an extension of the working men's groups.
Oh, right.
And that's how RMIT started. And that's why it was the Royal Melbourne Institute of Technology.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's where it started very early, I think in the 1850s, 1860s for that reason.
So was that like when mechanics institutes sort of time?
Yes, but it was a step above the Mechanics Institute. The Mechanics Institute was a mechanism by which people could learn to read and write and get basic skills. And then if you wanted more advanced skills, you went to RMIT.
Yeah, right.
So it was actually supported by both employers, unions and employees because people, it was good.
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah.
Made sense. And obviously you don't know your history.
No.
Darren, I don't know what you're doing
always
here.
Always learning.
Mate. Always learning. So how long did you last in the SEC?
The 4 years I was contracted for.
So what, you've been about 20 then, would you, when you left?
21, yeah.
21.
Yeah.
What?
Did you
did you get in love or something?
No, I ran away to sea.
You ran away to sea. Did you stow away?
No, not quite, but
what was your job?
I just deckhand on a tall ship, the old sailing ships.
Excuse me, hadn't you heard of coal-fired engines? What were you doing in a tall ship?
I just really I didn't like the electronics stuff.
Oh, I understand.
And just looking for something different. And I did a little sort of, they call them sail training voyages on a tall ship. And
so you were radicalised. They got you working there.
Yes, right.
The old story, give him a little bit and he fell for it.
100%. And
You're running up those masts and putting out those sails?
Yeah, like literally, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. All that stuff you think, it doesn't happen anymore, but there's these old ships still going around. A lot of them are just like you have a holiday on board some of them are more luxury than others. But, yeah, it's a whole world out there.
So what was your ship doing?
It was doing – the first one I got on went from Sydney to the Solomons to New Guinea back to Cairns down to Sydney. Mm. And it was people would pay to come on board, and it was like dive charters. And I just had a job – as a deckhand, just like looking after people and helping sail the ship and driving the dive boats and looking after gear and
these were Australian registered ships?
This was called the Eye of the Wind. And I'm not sure if it's even still going around, but it was registered like a Channel Island or
somewhere
like that.
Right. Yeah. Tax dodge, obviously.
Yeah, but very famous boat.
Now I'm going to ask you a very embarrassing question, man.
Who
calls himself a socialist. Well, you're a member of the Maritime Union of Australia at that time.
Do I have to answer? Because the answer is going to be no.
No.
At the SEC, I was in the union. But, yeah.
What was the union at the SEC?
Oh, that's a really good question as well. I don't even know. I was just docked down your pay every week.
Exactly.
I can't even remember what it was called.
So you weren't in your... So when did you get tired of the tall ships?
I was away for about 10 years.
10 years?
10 years all up, yeah. Sailing, worked on a couple of ski resorts. Ended up getting a yacht captain's license.
Wow.
So I can literally sail a yacht anywhere in the world.
Right.
You know.
I'm in awe.
It sounds better than it is, I think.
Can you swim?
Oh, yeah, I can swim, yeah.
Yeah, I remember my old man, he died, what, 25 years ago. He was actually, what's the word? He was actually a conscript in the Italian Navy, right?
Oh, wow. Okay.
And his job was a small bloke. His job was to shovel coal into the boiler of a tugboat. Could you imagine, you know?
Wow.
And I said to him one day as a kid, I said to him, oh, so you know how to swim? He said, there's no point learning if you're in a tugboat. But you learnt.
Yeah, but that's one of those old classic tales from, like, you know, hundreds of years ago. The sailors just, why would I want to learn to swim? If I fall over, but I'm going to die, why, like, prolong the agony?
Exactly.
So they didn't bother, right?
They didn't bother, no, yeah. They didn't bother. He said, you know, what's the point? He said, what's the point? It's just, just a waste of time.
Yeah.
So you're 30 plus, come back to Australia. You got any money?
Oh, a little bit. Yeah. Like, well, it's not. A lot of the tall ship stuff didn't pay very well.
No.
Ski resort jobs don't pay very well.
Non-unionised job, yeah. All non-unionised jobs. Mm. Yeah, yeah.
And then I did a bit of travelling, and that just involved spending money. And
where did you go?
Oh, well, the ski resorts were New Zealand and.
Ski resorts.
Yeah, New Zealand in Queenstown and another one in America on the border of.
So you've got a captain's licence. And what, you're a ski instructor?
Oh, no, I'm just a lifty. I was a lifty.
A lifter?
Yeah. The lift operator, checking tickets. Like, yeah.
Well, the electronic degree helped you there.
Oh, yeah.
In case something broke down.
Yeah. The best part of that job no one told me about was in the morning you had to climb the towers with a hammer.
Right.
And smash the wheels and the cable to unfreeze them from the.
Well, you'd be perfect climbing all those masts. You'd have no. Send Darren up. He knows what's to do. He's got no fear of heights.
He's got to wear more clothes.
Obviously, he wore gloves, obviously.
100%,
So how long did that last?
Oh, just two seasons.
Two seasons.
Yeah, that was it was fun.
Yeah.
But, like, I was never that into the ski. I did snowboarding, actually, never that into it.
Right.
And then just, like, I think someone that I'd met phoned me up and said, did I want another job on a boat or something?
Yeah.
And so I said, yeah.
Back on the boats.
Yeah. So. But it's that kind of world that you just, like, it's not very big in Australia, but in Europe, like, there's this whole circuit from the Mediterranean to the Caribbean that all the rich people do with their boats.
Right,
you know, get out of Europe in the winter, come back for the summer, and there's a whole lot of just trips across you can crew on, you know, even if you don't sort of stay on the boat the whole time. It's a big world out there on boats.
A very rich acquaintance, not a friend, said to me once, she said to me, Joe, you know you're on a good boat, this is the type of boat you think, when the workers have a chef.
Yes.
That's the key, that it's a really top boat. Mm. Were you on some of those boats where the workers, you'd never have?
No, never, no.
You had to do your own cooking.
Yeah. We had, like, some of the owners were pretty ordinary.
Yeah.
But, we had one or two that were really good.
Yeah.
But it's always kind of, the good ones would just have, they would muck in, right? And there was the same thing that we would do. They would do the night shifts, they would cook. But the horrible ones just expect you to do everything.
You got punny, didn't you?
Yeah, like, that's all that matters, right?
That's what they call wage slave. You're a wage slave. Yeah. That's the difference. Slaves get food, you get a wage.
Yeah, 100%.
It's to buy your own food.
Yeah, that's right.
So when did you come back to Australia?
Yeah, probably the early 30s.
Early 30s?
Yeah.
So was that 2000?
Man. I'm not good with joking. I'm not good with dates, joking.
Well, did you spend the year 2000 on the open sea?
No, I was definitely back by the 2000 bug era. I remember that.
You were here. Okay. And you were waiting to die, were you? Because it was going...
just got back into a normal life. Like, you know,
normal?
Well, you know, job.
What do you mean normal? What are you doing?
just wage slaving still, but not on the open sea, you know.
Wage slaving where? What?
I had a little business that my wife at the time and I myself started up.
Right. Well, what was the business?
It was kind of like it was an idea we got out of England.
Uh-huh.
And it was like a booking agency, but it wasn't just for tickets or concerts. It was like for hot air balloon rides or wine appreciation courses or fast car rides, that kind
of
thing.
Is that like Red Balloon?
Yes, that's the big one now.
Yeah.
They smashed us. They smashed. There were a few little ones around. They smashed everybody.
So that's the corporatisation of that type of industry.
Yeah.
So did you face bankruptcy or did you just jump out at the right time?
Yeah, just jumped out.
Right.
You could see the writing on the wall.
What did you do after that?
Well, I couldn't afford to pay anyone to do my public relations.
Right.
So I used to do it myself. And then on the back of that sort of learning, self-taught stuff that I'd done, I ended up getting a job at a big multinational PR
right.
firm.
Right.
They just sort of liked that I was older. I wasn't like a new graduate. Most of their new employees were just straight out of uni.
Yep.
So I worked there for 18 months, and that was all the bad things you could imagine working for a very big firm.
Public relations. Oh, so if things went wrong, they'd say, Darren, we've got this client who's a total bastard. Can you make sure they don't get exposed? Is that was about it, wasn't it?
Well, I wasn't in that division.
You weren't in that division. What was your division?
It was more like just the... I'm going to say the positive stuff.
Oh, right, right.
But a lot of it was just kind of harmless PR where...
Yeah.
I know, this is back in the days of VHS tapes when they'd release a new movie on a VHS.
Yep.
So you'd do giveaways and you might do a little stunt in, you know, inside of Flinders Street Station with someone dressed up and handing out, you know...
Didn't jump out of a plane with a balloon or some of a parachute. You don't do that?
No, no.
You just climb masts.
Yeah, right. That's right.
and towers. You're not a... Couldn't be you, is it? Pam.
No. I know where I was yesterday.
You know where you were?
This morning, wasn't it?
Yeah. No, well, you've got the expertise.
Oh, we absolved Santa off the town hall once.
Did you?
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Yeah. What, did you do that? Legally or illegally?
Oh, illegally for the legally. City of Melbourne for their Christmas celebrations. Right. That was fun.
You were hoping it didn't burst then.
Yeah, that's right. But the guy's beard did get tangled up in the ropes and stuff did halfway down. He had a little moment.
Yeah.
But he sorted himself out and kept coming down.
Right.
It was good. That was fun.
Well, this is an adventurous life. There's very little political dimension to it.
Well, that all came later for me.
Later?
Yeah.
When did that happen?
Well, I remember it was when around the time Sue Bolton got elected to the
council.
What was Marybeck Moreland at the time?
That's about 12 years ago?
Yeah, she's in her fourth term now.
Yeah.
And we had local papers, like we had the Leader newspapers at the time.
Yep.
And which I love. I think local papers are fantastic and we need more of them. And I went to an event a couple of Thursdays ago where the Rotunda, the young guy in North Fitzroy started a little sheet there, and the Brunswick Voice, Mark, and they were talking with a couple of other people about the importance of local media and how people really do like it. And I agree. The interesting thing was the event was full of people kind of my age, all reminiscing about papers.
Right.
When you go like, well, where's all the young people, right? The young people.
They're really on their phone.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah.
Do young people want a local paper? I don't know. But I think they're pretty cool.
Yeah, but Brunswick is all full of old people these days. Fitzroy, old people.
They're the ones that can afford it.
They're the ones that can afford the local paper.
Yeah. So I used to read about Sue in the paper when the council wanted to stop the respite care for mums with disabled kids. And
why not?
Well, and that was...
It's all privatising.
I know, right? Yeah. But Sue would be there saying, hang on, that's probably not a good idea.
Right.
And then they'd want to get out of aged care and Sue would go, well, do you think the council really should get out of aged care?
Yeah.
And so they just... kept reading this and going, like, Sue's got her finger on the pulse, right? The only one with a bit of common sense.
So just
hooked up with her and said, I'm happy to help and just started getting involved in local stuff.
Is that kind of like your dad, who was involved in Rotary, Lions, who did a lot of extra? Do you think that had an influence on you? Because before that, you really weren't involved in much except surviving. I mean, that's important, surviving.
Mm. Yeah. Look, maybe... Maybe I could credit him for that.
You know, the fact that you wanted to give back to the community.
Mm. Yeah. Well, I think that's super important, and I guess he did as well.
In his way.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. So that's, what, about 15, 20 years ago?
Probably 15, I guess.
15 years ago.
Yeah.
So are you one of these gentrified CBD people, inner city people? You live in Brunswick or someplace like that? I mean, obviously, you talk about Marybeck Council.
I do, yes.
You know.
Well, I'm West Brunswick.
West Brunswick.
I know I'm gentrified.
We have these dinners every Wednesday night in different parts of the city, you know, to get people involved. And there's a chap who'll come tonight because we have a dinner in Brunswick tonight on a Wednesday night. I won't mention his name. I don't want to embarrass him. He says... the only good people in Brunswick live in West Brunswick. He says it's the only place where there are it's working class roots and it hasn't been gentrified.
I know someone else lives in West Brunswick that says exactly the same thing. And he also says it's the most affordable in a city suburb. I know that doesn't mean a lot, right?
Oh, it means a lot.
Affordable, right? That's still got a high price tag on it too, but I think that's probably reflective of those working class routes still. Yeah, it's the only holdout suburb
left. So how long have you been in West Brunswick for?
Ooh, probably 3 years, and it was Coburg before that.
And where were you before that?
Before that was Glen Iris. Before that it was Elwood when we came
back. Right, yeah. So you just told me before that you weren't happy about moving from school to school. What do the kids say?
Well, they weren't around till Coburg.
They weren't around till Coburg.
They're still in Coburg.
They're still small.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, not smallish.
Smallish.
One's 17 and 19, so.
That's not smallish.
Well, you know, they've got a long way to go.
They're aggressive teenagers at that age.
They're not so aggressive.
No, I don't mean aggressive. I mean they want their independence, obviously. 100%. Yeah, yeah.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, and that's normal. You know, like you wanted your independence, I wanted my independence. You get in a row with your parents. You know, that's the old bird syndrome, isn't it? You fly out of the nest.
Yeah.
But the good thing about birds is they chuck you out of the nest if you don't want to fly out. But these days with the housing crisis,
I know,
you're stuck in the nest.
They're going to be around a long time, aren't they?
Yeah.
But it does annoy me, right? You see in the paper every now and again that someone's got their back up because, I don't know, there's too many kids on the streets or they're making a noise. And you go, like, don't you remember when you were that age, right?
Yeah. Go-karts down the street, which you made out of old prams. And,
yeah.
You know, you'd be playing cricket in the middle of the road. Mm. And, you know, you'd break the neighbour's window in front of the balls. And
they'd say,
they'd run after you and then they'd forget about it. You're right. Now, so were you helicopter parents, you and your partner?
Oh, no.
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 I mean, it probably wasn't the same as... Like you probably remember too, like when I was like, you know, I suppose early teens or even later, you're out of the house on the weekend and you might do sport or whatever, but then you're just gone. It's a different world now. So it wasn't, my kids didn't sort of grow up like that, but definitely conscious decision not to be helicopter parents.
Yeah. Well, that's excellent. Now, it's a strange time because I remember when I was a kid, I must have been 10, 12, and I befriended this Second World War veteran, because I'm much older than you, who had post-traumatic stress disorder. I didn't realise that, and he taught me how to play the harmonica.
Yeah, right.
And my parents, you know, they were happy with it. They didn't care. Mm-hmm. Oh, they did care, but they were happy, you know. There was no issues. Yeah, these days, you would call the police.
Yeah.
Now, getting back to you. And so are you a member of any political organisation?
Yeah, well, I'm a member of Socialist Alliance.
Right. How long have you been a member for?
Probably a few years after I met Sue.
And what attracted you to Socialist Alliance?
It's interesting. I credit Sue for joining the party, but there's great people in the party.
I'm talking about what type of policies that attracted you. I mean, I could go, you know, to a brothel and there'd be great people at the brothel. You know, you joined Socialist Alliance. I'm sure you didn't just join Socialist Alliance for the company.
No, but...
it's important.
100%.
You need to get on. But what type of kind of policies that they've got that attracted you?
Oh, in general, it's this fairness.
Fairness.
And it's equality. Oh. And it's just respect. It's the really basic things. I mean, I'm not a Marxist scholar. I couldn't quote some Marxist text to tell you why I joined. But it's just that whole thing about... They recognise injustice in the world and they say that's not right and we need to fix it.
Right.
And I'm definitely, you know, that's my bag right there.
That's your bag. So it's the old fair suck of the sauce bottle.
Well,
basically.
Mm.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah.
What makes you think in that direction? Because a lot of people in your situation with teenage sons who need a lot of financial support, and obviously I assume you're not a billionaire.
No.
Because I did notice you've got a public housing T-shirt on. So,
I'm getting in the zone.
Yeah, I don't think you're a billionaire. So what did you how did that change your life, joining Socialist Alliance, in terms of your time?
Oh, that's a good question, right? Because suddenly, you know what it's like. Obviously, it will just eat up. As much time as you want to give it, like that's the left, the cause, whatever it is, the party.
Yep.
And you know, it will just take everything out of you that you want to give. So, yeah, I mean, to be brutally honest, it probably didn't help my marriage, and which is why,
right,
you know, that I'm divorced from Kim.
Right.
A lot of credit to her for everything she did with the boys. Yeah, look, I probably wasn't, I probably wasn't the best husband, right? So
sound like your dad, mate.
Oh, I don't know if my dad. I don't know if my dad would ever say that, to be honest with you, but
I mean,
yeah, like, I could have been a better husband for sure.
Yeah,
I don't know. It's just interesting, is it? But like my mum, I credit my mum for a lot. Like my mum is unbelievable. I don't know. She's just an incredible woman. She's very cool, calm, and collected. My mum and my dad both used to volunteer a lot at their church. Like I'm not into church
religion,
anyway. But they did spend a lot of time there giving back.
Right.
So I saw that pretty much my whole life. Like my mum still does. So that probably, you just see that and you think that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
That probably helped me do the same thing. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to give you a rest for a few seconds. I'm going to just say that this is Community Radio 3CR. Henrietta's the producer, refuses to speak. We're chatting, not interviewing, chatting with Darren Saffin, two Fs. Don't confuse him with the tennis player. And it's been quite a fascinating look at your life, Darren. I mean, obviously you don't talk like this at home, do you?
Oh, I tell you, since this is a bit of a self-realization thing as well. Like after COVID, I did become a much more open person. I think just sitting at home, like for 2 years or whatever, just sort of not being completely introspective, but I suddenly started reading a bit about Stoicism and Marcus Aurelius and stuff, and you kind of come out of it and you go, like that's what it could be like, right?
Yeah.
It could be like that the whole time, and you just got to be. You got to be a different person after an experience like that. And I am a lot more open, with things that I'd say about myself, my feelings now than I ever used to be. My current partner is very much like that as well. She's awesome. Big shout out. We do.
Would you like to mention their name?
I don't know if she would like me to mention
it. All right. We'll call it the partner.
But yeah, we do chat like this, and she's
That's excellent.
Yeah. So she's good for me, very good for me.
Look, if you're a bit older, I would have said we could use some of this podcast for your funeral, but obviously you got years ahead of you.
I hope so.
Well, I'm sure you have. I'm sure compared to me, if you've got a long, productive life ahead of you. So what type of work are you doing?
I do public relations now.
Public relations?
I'm still in public relations. So
For Socialist Alliance? Or?
Well, I work 4 days a week.
Yep.
As a money-making job.
Right.
And that's a conscious choice so that I can spend that other day a week helping Socialist Alliance or helping the, say, public housing campaign or whatever it is, just with either public relations or rally organising or just stuff that needs to be done.
So is 4 days pay enough?
Oh, just.
Just.
Yeah.
It's difficult at the minute.
Mm.
It is difficult.
Yeah.
So if somebody says I'm a dead shit and I am a dead shit, can I come to you and you can rehabilitate me?
No.
No? Well, what's public relations? What does it mean?
Well, it's kind of in the name, right? I don't know. It's a funny job. Most people just call it PR. They don't really know what public relations is.
Is this your own business or you're working for somebody?
I work for someone now. Right. I did have a little splash on my own business, but it's hard finding clients.
Yep.
But working for someone, I've worked for this lovely woman for 19 years.
Oh, that's a long time.
It is. It's a long time, but she's fantastic. Mm. I started working from home before it was a thing, when she had her first child and then we had ours, and it was just kind of this work for us.
Right.
Done a lot of working from home, which is I like it a lot.
So how's public relations changed in the last 19 years? Because obviously the World Wide Web wasn't so significant then, was it?
No, and social media, obviously, and like these influencers. Like it hasn't always changed for the better. But basically, you watch TV or you listen to 3CR or you read a newspaper. You don't do that for the ads.
Right.
So you want to get your client into the media without them having to pay for an ad.
Right. So you're they're paying you for a freebie.
Yes, in effect, yeah. Because it's kind of like you're endorsed by the media outlet who's gone, wow, these people are important or they've got something special to say, so we'll give them free airtime to say it. So if you get your client in that space, people go, wow, they must be all right. They're on the news or in the paper, that kind of stuff.
Well, I'm happy to chat to somebody as long as not there's any financial advantage for them. You know, maybe. Who knows?
So
we could form a liaison here. You could throw a few few bits to our way.
Exactly.
I mean, if they're socially conscious and they, you know, want to talk about their foundation or whatever, why not?
Yeah,
why
and we do a lot of not-for-profit stuff, which is good. And I remember sitting in a meeting, you know, sort of a new business pitch with my boss one day, and it was about this online gambling thing. And after the meeting, I went, if we get this job, I'm going to have to tell my boss that I'm not going to work on it.
Right.
But after the meeting, she looked at me and said, I don't think we're doing that one. So so that was great, right?
Yeah.
I'm very happy to work for this fantastic person.
And you're the only employee or there's a few of you?
No, there's six of us.
Six of us.
So it's kind of
it's interesting.
Small to mid-sized
PR. So how do people... Look, I've never been involved in public relations, but what would people, what do they email you, they ring you, what, how do they get involved? What happens?
As in how clients get involved?
Yeah.
Well, basically it's a kind of, it's a funny job, right, because you pay and we say we'll do our best, but we don't have any guarantees. Like you go to the garage and you say, can you fix it? And they go, yes.
Yeah.
And they go to us, can you get us in the paper? And we go, maybe.
Maybe.
But we'll still take your money.
It's like a parliamentary election. You elect a representative, they say, maybe we can do something.
Exactly, right?
But you don't have to.
Yeah. So,
and they can't sue you if you can't.
No, right? Exactly.
You told them.
Yeah. So you do get people that say, oh, I'll pay you if you get me in the paper. And we're like, no, because you don't go to your accountant and say, I'll pay you if you get me a tax deduction.
Right.
So we go, no, we're a professional business. And we are, right?
Yeah.
But we just don't have guaranteed outcomes. But mostly we get new business from referrals.
Right.
From people that have done work for before. Well, and
that,
we've been
that means
successful.
You're a legitimate legal entity.
Yeah.
Because most good companies get work from referrals.
Mm, 100%.
Because other people have been happy with it and they refer their friends. It's a little bit like when you go to a garage or a doctor or something, you know, referrals are exceptionally important. As they say, 90% of your business comes from 10% of your clients.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you've got to do a good job and it's got to be nice and, you know, treat them with respect. And
well, just like you're treating me and Henrietta. We're very impressed, aren't we, Henrietta? Yeah, she's shaking her head as usual. At me, not the guest. Why don't you just put the microphone on, Henrietta? She's calling me rude. Maybe she should contact you to public relations for this program, Medical Australia. What do you reckon?
Yeah, maybe you need Henrietta in this chair one day.
Well, I have been, every producer I've had, I think I've been running this show about a decade, has spoken.
Okay.
Right? Some of them have spoken garbage and some of them have been brilliant. But Henrietta just refuses to speak. I have no idea why.
Just does a good job.
Well, she's brilliant. She'll take a photo of you because you were late, see, so we couldn't take a photo of you. She'll take a beautiful photo of you. She'll do the podcast. You can tell your public relations clients, this is me.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, you can trust me. I'm a decent fella.
Yeah, Joe will recommend me.
Yeah, exactly. We recommend you. All right. Now, you said you do activities regarding public housing. I know you organise this. Well, you're one of the main organisers for the Mass Rally.
Mm.
So, what other activities are you doing for the public housing?
Yeah, well, so we've done. That's the second rally that we've done.
Yep.
We did an event. We did like an evening event. We had Tubridge, the Green Senator there, and it was titled like, and we had Mercedes from 3CR there, and it was titled War or Public Housing, and it was about, you know, where should we be spending our money, right? A couple of Fridays ago, we had the Critical Mass Bike Riders.
Are they still alive?
Yeah, well,
they must be in their 90s.
Well, because I was chatting and I remember them before COVID.
Yeah, yeah.
And they used to, like, they'd ride up Sydney Road as basically an FU to the cars.
Yeah, yeah.
But the new sort of reiteration of them is this more socially aware, politically aware group. And so they rode up Sydney Road the other month and did little speeches about accessible tram stops.
Oh, right.
And they stopped at Flemington Towers, two Fridays ago, and I did a little chat to them. We had a resident speak about public housing.
Right.
So this kind of new iteration of them is a more socially aware sort of...
So they just don't put their finger up at motorists anymore.
There's probably a few that do, yeah.
They're still the old renegades.
Exactly, right. Yeah.
And what other activities with public housing? I mean, in terms of... I understand you're part of some groups.
Yeah. So the Safe Public Housing Collective, which started up probably the day after Daniel Andrews announced that he was going to demolish the 44 towers. Mm. So I kind of rep Socialist Alliance on that group.
Right.
Do a lot of stuff with them as well. We do a lot of letter writing. We do a lot of that sort of traditional stuff, you know, like chasing up. Can I drop some names?
Yeah, whatever you like. I mean, yeah, as I said, it's your hour. I'm just here to extract information out of you. This is public relations 101. I'm teaching.
Yeah.
You, all right?
Yeah, I feel like you're the guru of public housing, though, Joe. I don't know about that, right?
Look, I'll tell you why. I've been a doctor. This is my 50th year, and I was around. I've been looking after people, although I'm only part time now because I'm old. I've been looking after people with profound physical disabilities after trauma. So you could be walking down the road, get hit by a car and become a quadriplegic. Now, before NDIS, if you're hit by a car or workers' comp, you were covered. But if you fell off the roof or fell over on a footpath and you couldn't sue, you weren't covered. So your family was providing this intimate care for you.
Yeah.
And if you were the main breadwinner, if one day you got a job, a physical job or intellectual job, and the next day you're in hospital for a year, you're going to lose your home.
Mm, yeah.
And I still see, I do home visiting mainly these days, and I still see patients who've been in public housing for 40 years, the same unit, the same freestanding homes, because there are still a few freestanding homes, and that public housing has given them the ability to raise their children, educate their children, send them to the staying school. It's 25% of their income, which is usually a social security benefit. And without public housing, they would have got nowhere in their lives. So that's how I came to see the importance of public housing, not because I've needed public housing, but because I can see in a practical sense. Like Monday, I saw somebody yesterday who's been in Murrelbugs, been in a public house, spot purchased, 40 years ago, raised a family, is now expecting grandchildren.
Yeah.
And if it wasn't for the public housing, their life would have been terrible.
Yeah. And that's like, I did mention earlier that for a little while we were in housing commission.
Yeah.
When we were in the Chuka, I think it was. I didn't realise that until not that long ago.
Mm.
But I don't remember, there was no stigma at school. I don't remember being teased about that, right? It was just a necessary thing that society provided to a lot of people.
Yep.
And for some reason now the government has just decided that it's going to walk away from its social responsibility to some of the most vulnerable people that we know.
Yeah.
And they think it's a good idea, you know?
Well, it occurred after World War II. And if you look at some of the early photographs after World War II, you see tents pitched at the MCG and the Botanic Gardens for returned servicemen and women who, many of their friends had been sacrificed or injured in World War II fighting fascism, and they demanded something.
Yeah.
And you had the housing, and that's where the movement. So even good old Bolte, remember, the poor man's bridge was defaced yesterday. It wasn't you again. You've got the credentials. No masks. Yes. All right. You know, he was big on public housing. Mm. And at one stage, by the mid 60s, we had over almost 20% of Victorians were living in public housing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then was just, it's down to about 3% now, isn't it?
Something ridiculous, yeah.
Just ridiculous.
Weightless and insane.
And now they're being chucked out.
Yeah. But also, the Labor Party was founded as a democratic socialist party.
Yep.
You read their constitution, I read their constitution because I'm trying to embarrass them about that. They talk a lot about all this public housing, public health, public education. It's all in their constitution. Mm. This Evatt, I think his name was, an old
Doc Labor. Doc Evatt, yep.
Led the UN, helped draft the UN
Human Rights Declaration.
Yes, that's which has in there the same thing about housing and health and all those things that are human rights, not wealth-creating vehicles, which is what housing is now in this country.
Mm.
And Labor's just turning its back on this stuff they supposedly believe in.
Well, it's been since that neoliberal tsunami that swept over the country,
yeah,
which obviously people like in Socialist Alliance are fighting against tooth and nail.
Yeah,
Both in a parliamentary and an extra-parliamentary ways.
Yeah, and just, but like in every facet of life, like my current partner, I love her to death. She has these great ideas,
right?
But she won't like put them on paper. So she had this thing the other day about opportunity shops.
Yep.
And like you just see opportunity shops now that are money-making things.
Yeah.
So I wrote this little something that ended up in Green Left, like a lack of opportunity shops, I call it.
Yeah.
Because they're not places where you can go now if you're desperate for shoes or jeans.
That's right.
Like they're just making money hand over fist.
Yeah, well, it's part of the charitable economy.
Oh, man, that's the thing that
you know, the Salvation Army gets $8 billion a year from the federal government for running the unemployment benefits scheme.
$8 billion. I know, it's insane.
It is insane. So the thing is, about the public housing struggle, 20 years ago, before the charities or the religious organisations were incorporated in this privatisation, bandwagon, you'd have a protest and they'd all be there.
Yes.
Yeah. How many of those groups were at the public housing rally a few weeks ago?
None.
None.
Absolutely none.
And if you ask them to speak, they won't speak because they entered into contracts with the state government where they're not allowed to speak.
Yeah.
And people don't understand that.
Yeah, and you can just name drop the Community Housing Industry Association that has industry in its name for a start, and the public, Victorian Public Tenants Association. Yeah. All these organisations are so silent. Yeah. We wrote an open letter criticising a bunch of those organisations who wrote their own open letter that basically said, the best we can do is ensure just transition or fair transition from public housing into social housing. And so we came out and said, you're not even defending public housing. You should be saving public housing.
Mm.
But like, yeah, they're just rolling over to the hand that feeds them, you know?
Well, because they get the titles. And that's the key.
Mm.
Government hands over the titles of the social housing to those particular organisations. And that's how they wash their hands of it.
Mm.
So with...
you would have heard Foley House, obviously, speaking of the Starvation Army.
Yeah.
A disgrace.
Yeah.
They're not-for-profit religious,
yeah.
you know, this whole religious value-based organisation that are running a very niche home for much-needed, you know, for these men with complex issues.
Yeah.
And they go, cost too much.
Yeah.
Of course it costs too much. You can't just walk away.
Yeah.
And that's why the government can't give public housing to organisations like that, because they will just walk away.
Yeah.
When it's too tough, when they decide it's too much money, they'll just go, we're done.
We're done, yeah. The thing is, what people have forgotten is that there are, as far as providing social security to people, is there are areas that will never make a profit.
Mm,
and what you need to do is you need to divest the profitable into the non-profitable to provide the service.
100%.
But they're not willing to do that. It's like Australia Post. It says, we've got to keep increasing letter. But they refuse to, you know, cross-subsidise. There's no cross-subsidisation anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, with Socialist Alliance, what particular campaigns are you involved in?
Well, I should declare that I'm one of three Socialist Alliance candidates for the Northern Metropolitan Upper House seat at the state election in November.
Right, a candidate.
I know, right?
Three. What, you got three?
Three.
What are you, one, two or three?
I'm three. Which is all fun. We voted and...
Hang on, you're three.
I'm number three on the list.
You know what chances of being elected?
Oh, but imagine if all three of us got in, Joe. Yes, but I do know the chances, yes.
You're number three.
Number three.
I've been one on a few Senate tickets, it's brutal.
Yeah.
Brutal. So, brutal. I assume you'll be giving divided nations first preferences.
All over that already, Joe.
Yeah, already. You've discussed that, have you? Yeah, I thought, and you'd give the neo-Nazis a second preference.
Yeah, and it's a shame that there's more of them now than ever. But,
yeah.
But speaking of things we're doing, we have a rally against racism in Broadmeadows on the 25th of July.
Is that the one that's in the indoors? And outdoors. There's
outdoors.
Isn't there a meeting at Broadmeadows Town Hall also?
There is.
Yeah.
I can't remember when that is. But yeah, this is an outdoor rally at the Town Hall, marching.
Marching, right.
Okay. So yeah, that's jointly organised by a whole bunch of organisations. Socialist Alliance is just one of those.
Mm. Do you know any of the other organisations?
There's Palestinian organisations. There's something called Hume for Humanity.
Right.
There's a whole lot of kind of more faith-based, you know.
More faith-based, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's still good to see faith-based organisations involved in those type of activities, unlike public housing.
Yeah.
Because that's the tragedy. We don't have the numbers. First of all, people are confused. They think social housing is public housing. They don't understand it's private housing.
Yeah.
So they've been very good with their public relations, haven't they?
They've been very good, yes.
So what are you doing to counter it?
Well, it's tough, right? But we are trying to get a social media strategy together because the government is a bit more conservative with their social media, so we can be a bit more brutal, a bit more honest.
Yeah.
You know, we kind of want to put a bit of humour in there. Do you remember? Oh, was it Miley Cyrus sang a song about a wrecking ball?
Yep.
I want to put the Minister for Housing, Nick Stakos's face on a picture of Miley Cyrus sitting on a wrecking ball and do some stuff with that.
Yeah,
I mean, that kind of thing we can do, right?
Of course, you can. Yeah.
So we're gonna try and bust this. You know, we always have. It's funny, social alliance. Everyone's awesome, but they're all very serious.
And when we try and do
a bit of humour and stuff, it's a bit of a hard sell, but, you know, we can get there.
I said to Henrietta, Darren's in Socialist Alliance. He's a very serious character. Watch out.
Yeah.
I can't be funny with him. I can't use any humour. But you know what brought down the Communist Party in Russia? Underground humour.
Yeah.
Because nobody had any faith anymore because of all the humorous cartoons and jokes about it. It is a great undermining tactic, which I use constantly here at 3CR, satire, irony. I'll give you an example. I think it was last week I was talking about Moira. You know your mate Moira Deeming?
My mate.
And I had one of my headings was Headlocks, Primary School 101.
Yeah.
You know, because in primary school, you put a headlock on, you want them to smell your armpit. Yeah, that was the whole point. And she says you didn't know what a headlock is. Obviously, you went to primary school.
I know, right?
You know, so a bit of humour.
Yeah, for sure.
And people appreciate that. They understand, and you can't be serious all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, they're serious issues,
but
as you said, you need to put a bit of humour in.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
So, Clowns for Socialist Alliance, which was, you should form a faction.
Well, we did a photo shoot of all the candidates.
Yeah, yeah.
Like in some back alley in Brunswick with murals and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And someone goes, oh, it looks like a photo for a band.
So
we're going like,
you're going there,
getting the band together for the election type stuff, right? Yeah. So we've got to bring that one out sometime.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. But, we could just have some fun with it and hopefully attract different people that, you know, wouldn't look at our serious stuff as well, you know. But
Well, you can attract people to look at serious stuff in many ways.
Mm.
But if you just say, we stand A, B, C, D, E, they go.
Yeah.
Short attention span, not interested.
Yeah.
Let's go back on YouTube.
Yeah.
I'm sure I can find a cat video somewhere.
I know, right? Oh, social media, man.
Do you have a personal social media presence?
I got one because I'm in a book club.
What's the book club?
The book club's called Tough Guy Book Club.
Tough Guy.
Tough Guy Book Club. And the guy that started it, it's a massive thing now. It's like there's 180 chapters around the world.
Yep.
He's a
ex-wrestler.
No, he's a dude from Brunswick. He's very cool.
Yeah.
And he said, but if I called it the Nice Guys Reading Circle, who would come?
Exactly.
So he's called it the Tough Guy Book Club.
Yep.
And so meet monthly in pubs.
In pubs.
Yep.
And you drink beer.
Drink beer while we read, while we talk about the books.
But you don't drink wine, hopefully, just beer.
Oh, you can drink anything you like.
Mainly beer.
Well, most guys.
If you're Tough Guys.
Yeah, exactly, right? But he has a whole riff and the kind of logos and stuff, and he calls them chapters because he's kind of riffs off the bikey thing.
Yeah.
You know, because, the marketing's really good. He just, it's really, really good.
Well, that's it, yeah. And what's the book you're currently looking at?
Oh, now you're testing me because the meeting was just last Wednesday and I didn't actually make it. So I don't know what we're reading
now. The previous book that you actually...
I didn't read that one.
You're in a book club.
I know. Yeah.
I'm going to get you expelled.
I actually used to run one of the chapters. I stepped back. I ran the Pascover one, and I stepped back because the election's coming up, and we were getting really busy with public housing and Socialist Alliance. So I actually stepped back. So that's my excuse. That's why I don't know what the book is.
All right, we've only got a few minutes left. What is the best book you've ever read? And don't tell me it's Karl Marx's Das Kapital.
No. God, that's hard work. Have you ever read Ender's Game?
No.
Oh, written by a prick, an absolute right-wing prick, but the book is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
It's got an awesome twist at the end, and I won't do a spoiler.
No, don't tell us. Yeah.
But you just read this book, never saw this coming. And I must have read it when I was in my early 20s, and I still remember my jaw hitting the floor and just going, what?
Yeah.
Incredible book. Amazing book. But also, John Steinbeck. We did some of those at book club. They're pretty cool.
Yeah.
Mm. Neil Gaiman, although he's in a bit of a cancel culture thing at the moment with allegations about his nanny. But American Gods by him was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Brief History of Seven Killings, which is kind of about Bob Marley.
Yep.
That's pretty cool. You got to read that one in a Rastafarian accent, though.
Right.
But that's accent. Cool. See, a lot of good stuff coming out of book club,
Now, in the last 2 minutes, how do you feel about the future? Hopeful, hopeless, in between?
Oh, look, I'm pretty optimistic.
Good.
Like, I do stuff and I think it's all going to work. Yeah. But then it doesn't all work, right? But you go, okay, fine. You just try the next thing. So, yes, I'm hopeful about the future. In the long term, I think we've got some pretty shitty times coming up for I don't know how many years. But look, I think that you can see the backlash to Trumpian politics and the shit going on over there. Yeah. And I think that's really important and people will see that that's not the way forward. But, you know, it's going to take a while to get to the point, I think, when like, not business as usual again, but at least we're a bit more lefty in general.
Yeah, using a bit of political jargon, I always say neoliberalism is the superhighway to neo-fascism. Now we've reached that stage where it's been shown to be a total dud and ordinary people have been basically excluded from the profits and they're looking at neo-fascist solutions.
It's nothing
new.
Yeah,
well, Darren Saffin, SAFFIN, thank you.
Another 3 minutes.
Mm. Oh, thank you, Henrietta. It's not that clock, it's her. See, she thinks, Henrietta thinks she is the Time Lord.
I'll plug another.
Yeah, plug something else. What else are you plugging?
The Sydney Road Accessible Tram Stops Now campaign.
That's been going on for a decade.
But that's like, it's one of these things. Like, I was handing out flyers for a rally. The rally's on the 18th July, Saturday, 18th of July, Wilson Avenue, Sydney Road corner. You hand out flyers for this, and people go, hasn't that happened already?
That's
why
right.
Why are we still talking about this?
Yeah.
Isn't there federal legislation about this? And you go, yes, and no, nothing's happened. And it's like that all the time. It's such a no-brainer.
Yeah.
But the government just doesn't want to put accessible tram stops on Sydney Road, and they need to do it before the train line is shut for the second lot of level crossing removals. They had time to do it in the first lot of level crossing removals. They didn't do it then. They got to do it before. And they also need to duplicate the end of the upfield train line.
Mm.
It's the only train line in Melbourne with 20-minute trains with the single track left. They took a lot of that stuff out when they did a whole lot of work in COVID. They're shit. The government, a safe sea, right? The further north you get up there, the safer it gets, and they're just ignoring everything.
Divided nation may win that seat. You never know.
You never know.
You never know. And then you'll be out in the streets every day. Now, if people want to contact Socialist Alliance, you've got a web page they can go to?
Yeah, we do. We're all over the socials. Just look for Socialist Alliance Victoria because there's, you know, Socialist Alliance Australia, New South Wales, South Australia, all the other stuff.
Victoria.
You can just Google Socialist Alliance Victoria. We have branch meetings on Tuesdays. We have educationals. We have fundraisers.
Mm.
We look after Green Left, and Green Left is our media outlet for Socialist Alliance, and there's the Friday breakfast show on 3CR. Thank you very much, 3CR, is our Green Left radio show. So there's lots of ways to get in touch, lots of ways to get involved, and we'd love to see people.
And if you want to join this Tough Guy Book Club, how do you do that?
Just toughguybookclub.com.
That's it, toughguybookclub.com.
Yeah. And it's awesome. Like, it's men only, but men that are more left. There's these like community gardens. I got a community garden. It's people that are left. Like anything that's got the sort of community in it, you don't see neoliberal right-wing people there because that's not what they're about.
No, they're about
it. So don't be put off because it's men only. It's an awesome thing. It's all about getting men to read more, talk more, and make more friends.
Right. Well, thank you very much for coming on the program, Mr. Darren. Is it Mr. or Doctor or Professor? I keep forgetting.
Just Mr. That's fine. Yeah.
You don't get a prefix to your name because you're a captain?
No.
Is it captain?
No.
No, you don't even get a captain. No.
You're listening to a 3CR podcast recorded in the 3CR Community Radio Studio in Melbourne, Australia. If you like what you hear, please consider donating or subscribing so we can keep bringing you more independent community content. For more information, Go to 3cr.org.au.